This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Paul Osborne joins us, the City Hall Insider, former mayor of Decatur, publisher of the Decatur Tribune. Good morning, sir. I thought yesterday was a pretty good day for our country.
It was, and good morning, Brian. And I think the country needed that. We've been beat up for so long, and it was nice to take a day off and enjoy a lot of the traditions that we've had and see America at its finest, to see a lot of flags, to see a lot of patriotism, to see a lot of commitment and lifting people up and seeing all the comments about working together and unity. And, of course, later on those have to be fulfilled starting today. But we needed that. Americans needed that. It's kind of been a long, dark night, and we stepped into the daylight yesterday, and it felt pretty good. It felt pretty warm.
Yeah, and I think the rest of the world needed to see that, too, to be honest with you. I'm glad you agree. I thought it was an important step. A lot of hard work. Today is a whole different day, and there are a lot of problems to tackle, and we got a lot of heavy lifting to do, but it was a good start anyway. Let's talk a little bit about what you wrote about in your City Hall Insider column this week about the City Council and the Macon County Board. Now, I don't know what it was like when you were mayor. I mean, I remember, but it's been a while. We have a lot of governance in the state of Illinois. We got a lot of school districts. We got a lot of county boards. We got township government. We got city government. They're not always firing in the same direction.
No, and what I wrote about, too, was I was a little disappointed when the Macon County Board kind of split from the city, and they decided to kind of go their own way, in opening things up. And I think it's really been important that the county and city, in particular, work as one in dealing with COVID and the fallout from it. And I wish they would have waited just a little bit longer, maybe 4 days longer, before taking the action they did to open things up and go contrary to the state's mandate. Some may say, well, maybe the state wouldn't have done what they had done if some of these counties had not started breaking off and starting to go their own way. I don't know. But I thought the city council made a wise decision a week ago in saying, let's wait and see what the governor is going to do before we decide what we want to do. I think that was a good move.
And there are liability issues. The city of Decatur was pretty swift in sending out a release saying that regardless of the 12-9 vote on the Macon County Board, that they were going to follow along. I mean, there are some long-term ramifications that can come from these decisions, notwithstanding people's health, where this can hurt you. There can be clawback provisions. There can be dollars that are lost or owed back. Every one of these decisions is incredibly important.
That's right. And as I wrote, too, I think, apart from a lot of the decisions that the county board or, in particular, my knowledge is of the city council, are fairly routine. And most of them are routine. You have some that are controversial. But the last year, we've been dealing with life and death decisions, to go ahead and do something and possibly cause more infections or more deaths in our county. That's kind of fallen on the shoulders of the city council and what they want the citizens to do and the county board. So it's not like deciding what road to asphalt next or work on next. These are decisions that are important to our business community, to the health of our community, number one. And when you're a councilman or a county board member, when you weigh these decisions, they're pretty heavy decisions you're making with long-term ramifications. And nothing routine about the decisions of the past year.
All right. A controversial, I think it's not as controversial if you take the time to consider it, but it was announced yesterday that prisoners in the state of Illinois would be on this list to get at the front of the line on vaccinations. And, of course, on Facebook or social media, it immediately turns into, all right, well, you're going to give a murderer a vaccine, but not grandma. I would like people to consider, A, the guards and all the people that work in these facilities, but B, if these people get really sick and they're a prisoner, there's not a hospital inside of the prison. They go to our hospitals. And at one point, I remember Tanya Andrix telling me early on, if 25% of the Macon County Jail comes down with serious COVID-19, it could literally fill up our beds in our local hospitals.
Right, and I think the immediate reaction, just a knee-jerk reaction, why should prisoners, why should people committing crimes or have committed crimes and in prison because they committed crimes, why should they go ahead of elderly people who've been innocent of any crime and they're struggling for their life? But I think if you look at the bigger picture of why this was proposed and why this came to be a news item, there's more to it than just the initial knee-jerk reaction, like, you know, no prisoners first. You know, well, let's just deal with the general community first and the elderly first instead of dealing with them. But I think there's a much larger picture here to consider.
Yeah, and I don't think it's an either-or proposition.
No, and I think it's the decision that I just mentioned, too. You know, every decision involving COVID-19, every decision has implications of life and death and ill health. I mean, whether you're the governor or a council member or the mayor, I mean, you're making some life-changing or life-threatening decisions. Not like, you're making decisions whether to annex a property or something like that. I mean, you're dealing with people's lives and you're dealing with people's livelihoods. And that's about as important a decision you can make when it deals with something like that.
Yeah, I wish everyone would, you know, like stand in a corner and count to 10. If social media had that rule, maybe we wouldn't have to deal with all this. I'm not saying that there aren't people that have legitimate questions, and we do, about how many vaccinations are available, and you know, we have a limited amount. And I get why it's sort of either or in people's minds, but I don't think that it was proposed that you make senior citizens wait while we do this. It was that they're all included in that same category.
That's right. And I think and maybe we have a lot of knee-jerk reaction because of fear of people wanting this to be over with, people wanting to, be vaccinated. And I don't know. I think just immediate questions pop up in people's mind or resentment because maybe we don't have enough here and we don't have enough vaccines here. And the reaction is, well, why should they go before me? You know, I'm 80 years old or I'm 75 years old and I've got some preconditions here. I should go before some prisoner somewhere and probably don't think it through.
Yeah, and I think what people have missed, or some people have missed from the very beginning of this, you know, going back to March, is the potential to overrun our healthcare system, and what that means to everyone is at the very top of this priority list of making sure that doesn't happen.
That's right, and I think that's what we always have to consider. And I think as the mayor said earlier too, we have to realize that when we start opening things up again, you know, as we're starting to do, we could have this happen all over again if we're not careful, if we're still not taking the same precautions, if we're now arguing over the vaccines instead of maintaining the precautions we have been. They're loosening up, but I can tell you, if this comes back in full force in Macon County, that would be devastating to this community. And when we've come so far to this point, but also, if we tax the healthcare facilities way beyond what they can handle, we're in double bad shape then, because they can't even deal with what we've created here. So, I don't know. My advice has been, and it's still what I do and what I practice. You know, I'm glad things are opening up. I'm glad for the businesses that have been struggling. So, but also take it easy and be cautious and. Let's take this one step at a time, and let's make this a positive move that we can come out of this in the best possible way.
Also, a lot of noise about recreational cannabis. What I don't understand for the people on social media that are outraged that this advisory referendum was thrown off the ballot, all you had to get was 1,529 signatures.
That's right, and I've never understood that either. I don't know. Even some people in times past that have run for office, you know, they don't get enough signatures, enough valid signatures, and they don't double check them. And should something be allowed on the ballot when it doesn't meet the requirements of being on the ballot? I mean, if that's the case, then put anything on the ballot. And there's a certain list you have to follow in order to be qualified as a candidate or to get something on the ballot. And if you don't comply with that, you're not a candidate. It's going to be on the ballot, and anything you want to put on the ballot is not going to be there unless you follow the rules.
I mean, but they weren't even close.
No, and I suspected that at the beginning. I heard a few rumors before this was even decided that some of those signatures would not be valid, and overall, it probably wouldn't go through. So that was a rumor that was making the rounds even before the decision was made.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're 600 signatures short, when all you need is 1,529, I mean, you're not even in the ballpark.
No, and I think that's what you do as a candidate. I know I did as a candidate, and I think if something is really important to you, you don't get close to the number. You go way over the number you need just in case it's challenged, and you don't want to fall short. And so if you have some names thrown out, you'll still have plenty to still get it on the ballot, or you'll still be a candidate because you just didn't get the exact number. You know, you went overboard and got so many that it guaranteed that if some were taken off for whatever reason, it would still go through.
And the idea of these advisory referendums, I mean, you know, I feel like we live in a representative democracy. We live in a republic. You know, we elect you, or we elect Mayor Wolf, or we elect other council members or county board members to make those decisions. The idea of turning decisions over to referendums, in the 25 years I've been doing this, it's not been a smart thing, because we elect a representative democracy to make those decisions for us.
That's right. And if you're going to, you know, to try to go to the public and ask them a decision, make a decision for us on everything, that's why we elect people. And that's why we examine their credentials before they go in or before we vote for them. How do they line up with what I believe? What's their platform? What's their background? And then after they're elected, we want the community to advise us how they feel about something. You tell the candidates how you feel about something, or the office holders, by not voting them in the next time when they run for re-election. But I don't know. That's why I like the council-manager form of government, that it eliminates a lot of that. The council has the authority to make decisions for us, and you don't have to go to the public and say, let's vote on this or let's vote on that. It's a terrible way to rule. And as you mentioned, the advisory referendum usually causes a lot of hard feelings to begin with. It's just like, this is, if the council has a majority that will not vote for something that you have the advisory referendum on, I don't think the referendum is going to change their mind if it goes the other way. And we've seen that. And we referred, I think, a few weeks ago to, and Bill Mitchell gets all the blame for this, but that advisory referendum on leaf burning, that caused a lot of hard feelings, because people wanted to burn their leaves. And the council stood its ground at that point. So I think you create a lot of controversy and hard feelings when the public feels that if they vote for this, that's what the council is going to do. That's an advisory referendum. That's not necessarily the way they're going to go.
Yeah, and an advisory referendum to me is the ballot. You know, when you go vote. I mean, you know, these people serve a term, and you either like what they did or you don't like what they did, and you vote to retain them or you vote to get them out. That's the ultimate advisory referendum that's in the hands of the citizens.
Well, and that's why, too, you know, I think the media, they try to identify the platforms of the candidates as much as they possibly can. Before you vote for someone, you need to know how they feel. If they're going for re-election, you need to take a look at what they've done, the stands they've taken, how they vote about this, or were you in agreement with their vote the last time? Are you disappointed in the service they've rendered to the community? Well, if you are and they're not standing up for what you think, vote for somebody else. That's the advisory referendum. Like, I don't like the job you're doing, or I like your platform if you're running as a candidate. I'm going to vote for you because it's in line with what I believe. That's why you vote for these people.
Former mayor of Decatur, Paul Osborne, publisher of the Decatur Tribune. Best to you and your family, Paul. We'll talk to you next week. We really appreciate it. The City Hall Insider.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.